Good afternoon, everybody. So for those sitting on Teams there, if you can just, everybody jumped. That must have been pretty loud. See everybody jump on the screen there. We'll get started for Senate State Affairs Committee calling it to order. Today's Thursday, March 18th, 2021. Let the record reflect times 3:32 p.m. If you happen to be on Teams, since we're operating on kind of a remote stance here, if you could just make sure you're muted while you're not talking, that way we don't get the feedback. We're meeting remotely today except for myself and my committee aide and our two helpers inside, our two legislative staffer help. We have Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Costello, Senator Holland, Senator Kawasaki remotely on Teams in the building. And we have myself, Chairman Schauer, in the committee room. And as I've talked before, we're doing this from the kind of safety perspective to show that we can operate this way and we can put less people in a room together, which should be something we should be considered if we're really concerned about the safety of our folks. We have the ability to do this. We should be working in that direction. As the as we move on into this, we're going to remind you to please, well, that's in the script about cell phones. We don't really need that with four of us here. Not an issue. Disregard. Don't need to do cell phones. We're going to be doing this for video conference. I've talked about muting yourself. Staff assisting us today is Terrence Shanigan behind me, committee aide for Senate State Affairs in my office, Carrie Cooper Ryder with us for Senate Records, and we've got Alex behind us for the LAO. Before we begin the meeting, I'd like to address a procedural adjustment in the committee. On Tuesday, we met remotely and held our normal committee hearings via the Teams video link. The meeting went off well, in our opinion. Today, we're going to be conducting the meeting in the same manner with the addition of moving a bill out of the committee. We sought a legal opinion from our nonpartisan legislative legal office that we all rely on for their objective legal work to advise us as a legislative body. And outlining that it's permissible to go ahead and move both amendments and bills through and out of the committee. We're going to go through that today as a process. With the COVID concerns and a lot of people in the building that are both becoming positive in the close contacts and quarantines, as the chair of this committee, I've decided for the safety of all employees, staff, and legislators, the best practice is to meet via the Teams link. The legal memo states we are able to move legislation out of committee in these limited situations as long as three members of the committee are present in the building and online with us live during a meeting. And the way that's going to work is we'll be able to bring the paperwork around to your individual offices so that you can sign it. I'll take a short roll call and would ask that the committee members state your name, where you're located in the building, and your office number. The purpose is to get this on the record so that we can meet the quorum requirements and create an efficient process when staff comes around to have you sign committee reports as we move a bill or bills out of the committee. I realize the committee report is subject to the acceptance by the body, and I encourage Senate colleagues to embrace this procedure just so that you're aware of it. Alleged legal opinion of remote participation in committee meetings from Ledge Legal, and we had asked the question, and basically just a couple highlights out of this is that historically the only restriction on remote participation for committees is that members cannot vote to move a bill from the committee unless they are physically present to sign the committee report. Uniform Rule 24A provides that the committee reports must be in writing and the report must be signed by a majority of the members of the committee. Doesn't give a timeline. In the past, this provision has consistently been interpreted to require that members be physically present to sign the committee report. This is largely because when members participated telephonically in committee hearings, they were not physically located in the Capitol or in the same location as the meeting. However, with the COVID-19 pandemic, to increase social distancing, we're more consistently seeing members participate in meetings by teleconference or video conference from within the Capitol or the same location as the meeting. Therefore, in Ledge Legal's opinion, it would not be a violation of Uniform Rule 24A if the member voted by teleconference or video conference from within the Capitol or the same location as the meeting, so long as the member was present to physically sign the committee report within a relatively short amount of time. And the point of that, folks, as I said, is if we have committee members come around and sign after that, we're meeting the guidelines of the 6 feet and 15 minutes, so we don't have to sit here amongst ourselves and other people inside this room, which we're doing throughout this building every single day. We're forcing hundreds of people to come into this place and sit here in caucus meetings and committee meetings and floor sessions and offices where we have close quarter contact. So this is just an effort to show that we can operate this way only temporarily while we need to until this is over and we move on to normal operations. And that's the purpose of today for the safety side of it. So there you go. Moving on, we have two items on today's agenda. We'll be hearing bills previously heard. Talking about SB 40 Veterans Benefit Services. I'm talking too fast. I don't know why. None of you are here. Disclosure, both sponsored by Senator Rebeck or sponsored by Senator Rebeck. Additionally, we'll be hearing an introduction of SB 31 prohibiting binding caucuses. We were going to talk about SB 39 today, election integrity bill, but have removed it off the agenda. We're still waiting on the updated draft from Legislative Legal. We'll have that updated and out here as fast as they get it back to us. Are there any questions or comments from committee members before we proceed with today's agenda?
Do you take the roll?
Whoa. I did not do that yet, but thank you, Senator Reinbold. And we're going to turn the volume down just a tad before you speak again, because that time we all jumped. It was very loud. So we're going to go through a roll call real quick. We'll just start right down it, starting with Senator Reinbold.
I'm here.
Muted.
And office as well. Location and office number, please. You're actually muted. Actually, did you turn it down too low? I can't hear anybody.
You guys, okay, this is Senator Reinbold. I am in room 427 at the Capitol, and Senator McChicky is here as well.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go on to Senator Costello.
Hi, this is Senator Costello, and I'm in room 119 in the Capitol.
Actually, Senator Costello, I thought you were out in outer space, facing your background. Just kidding. Sorry. Senator Holland.
Senator Holland, and I'm in room 113 in the Capitol building.
Thank you very much, Senator Kawasaki.
This is Scott Kawasaki. I'm actually offline. I'm two blocks away from the Capitol and can see the building from here.
Thank you very much. All right. The first item on today's agenda is going to be SB 40, Veterans Benefit Services Disclosure. Good. And so we're moving on to that one. I'd like to bring this bill back up with the intent of moving it out of committee today. There were no amendments submitted for this bill, and testimony was open and closed in a previous meeting. It is my intent to move SB 40 out of State Affairs today. But before I do that, I'd just like to open it up to the committee if there are any further comments or discussion on SB 40 prior to doing so. Does anyone have questions or comments? Okay, Senator Reinbold, do you have a motion from the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate State Affairs Committee. Are we SB 23?
40, SB 40, my apologies.
Oh, shock. Sorry, just one second. I'm trying to find the motion. Can you brief at ease? I'm sorry.
Stand back.
Just one second.
On the record, Senator Reinbold, and I apologize, this is how we work these out, to know that if you're sitting beside me to make that one change on it, I can't show you that. So, but we'll fix that for the next time. So, Senator Reinbold, did you find the motion?
I wouldn't. I'm going to make a quick little recommendation that we put page numbers on these in the future, and I need to do that as well. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate State Affairs Committee, Senate Bill 40, Work Order 32, LS0231, /A, be moved out of State Affairs.
Are there any objections from committee members? Seeing none, the bill is moved out of committee. We'll take a at ease when my committee aide comes by your office with paperwork for you to sign, and then we will go back on the record. On the record. For just a moment, folks, he'll be by your office shortly. We have two ways we're looking to do this. One is to have this signed real time if we have extra staff, which today we don't, to run through and have this done while we continue the meeting. So we're going to time it and see how long it takes. The second part of it is we may go with where you just delay it and come by, have you all come, or we'll come by your offices at the end of the meeting, and if there may be multiple things to sign, which is fine because there's no time limit. So we're going to try both ways just to see which works better in the meantime. So, and before we go to the next thing, as we get ready, which we can go ahead and get started on, are there any questions or comments from the committee members before we go to the second item on today's agenda? Senator Holland, go ahead, sir.
What's the what will be the next item on the agenda so I can start pulling it up?
The next item on the agenda will be SB 31, prohibiting binding caucuses, which should be in your packet.
Thank you.
The only, ma'am? Yes. The only reason we are pausing at the moment is because of my one of my staff, who is not here because of the concerns of what's happening in the building, has brought us to the point where I can't have two doing both directions. So I have to wait on my one staff to come back. So at this point, we're going to stand by for a moment. And just so that we're not sitting here staring at each other aimlessly, I will wait until Terrence comes back, and then we will continue. So it should take about 2 to 3 more minutes, and we'll be back on the record. Okay, everybody, I'm going to go back on the record, and I have already determined, watching how this plays out, that as we do these, it is wiser and it is more efficient to wait until after the meeting to go around and have everybody sign. This takes too long, so we're not going to do that again. But, hey, how do you know until you try it? So we're going to continue on. Moving to SB 31, prohibiting binding caucuses. This is a bill I sponsored previous session, and I'll go ahead and speak to it. And then once we're done, we're going to have a staff read a sectional analysis, and we'll go through questions. So as we get started here, I'm just going to do this from the podium. SB 31, prohibiting binding caucuses, an act relating to binding votes by or for a legislator under the Legislative Ethics Act. SB 31 addresses the ethics statute and bans the practice commonly known as a binding caucus. The tradition of a binding caucus in the Alaska State Legislature has been used to suppress the voice of certain people and the people that they represent, the use of coercion and enticements to manipulate the actions and votes of their elected representative or senator. The caucuses are formed with the enticement of perks of being a majority member, including but not limited to influence within the organization, chairmanships of important committees, better office space, more staff to help you be effective. All of these are not nefarious on their face, but as applied in the binding caucus, they are exchanged for the participating representatives or senators' vote on key issues such as the budget or procedural items. If you go to AS 2460039 G1, caucus means a group of legislators that share a political philosophy or have a common goal or who organize as a group. Ultimately, it is a caucus of ideas. Because it does not state the use of coercion or enticements are not prohibited, should not be misconstrued that it is permissible, especially since these two activities are prohibited for private citizens under Alaska criminal statutes. Where the nefarious intent creeps in is a quid pro quo required to join the club. In exchange for the associated perks under a binding caucus, a legislator is required to vote for a budget well in advance before that budget is known, and having never or be under the power of a small group of leadership and those members who support it. It has also been used as an arbitrary tool for supporting any floor vote. The presiding officer decides as a procedural vote, or it has been weaponized as a tool of control. Control of legislators through a binding caucus consolidates power into a tiny group of legislators, those in leadership, the presiding officer, the majority leader, the rules chair, the finance co-chairs. When a caucus member capitulates to the pressure, their constituents are compromised. When a caucus member is disciplined, it also disenfranchises that elected official that the voters put into the majority party. This practice is only accepted in the state of Alaska. I have talked about this previously many times, including a research project across the country, talking to other states, senators, and representatives. The sponsor contacted a senator, myself, from all those other states, and all but one stated they do not use or permit the practice of a binding caucus and their state. The binding caucus has been around in Alaska since the very first session and has at times been used, and there have been a few times where it has not been used. Public pressure has forced the Senate this time around not to organize under a binding caucus. It's time to codify this unethical practice of forcing legislators to vote against their conscience and ultimately their constituents. If the other 49 states in the union can do business without it, then so can we. I'm going to ask my committee aide, Terrence Shanigan, to come take the podium at this time and walk us through a sectional analysis. No, he's not online. Oh, he is online, but you can still take the chair. It's fine. A minute ago, he was not online. Now he is. So, Mr. Rogan, if you're ready, I'll go ahead and have you run through the section analysis, then we'll open up the questions. But before we do that, are there any committee members' questions for the sponsor, which is me at this time?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Rambold.
Thank you for bringing 24th. I just got a pop-up today on my phone that showed I virtually got punished 6 years ago today for my binding caucus. You know what? It was actually a preliminary budget vote, but in 2015. And so this is like a six-year anniversary, so this is really important timing for me, and I thank you very, very much for bringing this forth. I see it's coming to judiciary next, which is great.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Other questions from committee members? Okay, we have myself and Terrence Shanigan here in the room, and we're going to have Mr. Ogan, my senior policy advisor. Please go ahead and introduce yourself on the record with your name. You know how it works, and take us to the sectional. It's very short.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, great. As you can see from my background, I'm out in the wilderness. It's great. My name is Scott Ogan. I'm senior policy advisor to Senator Mike Schauer. This is a very easy sectional analysis. There's two sections to this bill. Section one adds a definition of caucus and legislative body to the guidelines of the Open Meeting Act under the legislature's ethics code. And section two creates the ethics violation of binding another legislator to commit their vote on any matter that may become for the legislature. It clarifies that voting for selecting an officer or a leader of the legislative body is an allowable practice. And it also clarifies that running an informal poll, also known as a chit sheet, is an allowable practice. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Ogan. Do we have any questions from committee members at this time for Mr. Ogan or myself, and open the floor for just debate and discussion?
This is Scott. I got a question.
Senator Kawasaki, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Is binding a person a term of art or committing a term of art?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Ogan on that one because I'm not sure how you would say a term of art and how that applies.
Mr. Chairman, I think my microphone is still on, is it?
It is. Go ahead.
You know, it might need a definition. That's a good observation, Senator Kawasaki. We may wish to put a definition in statute what binding means. I don't know if there – I'm sure it's not defined somewhere. So, yeah, I think it's a term of art. That's a good way to describe it.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've been in the minority most of my time here, with the exception of one term, the 29th legislature. We had a bipartisan coalition, had two independents, three Republicans, 17 Democrats. There was never a time where we ever talked about how we were supposed to vote. And so when I went to the floor, I voted the way I wanted to. There were people that were disgruntled, but we voted basically because we were a coalition group that wanted to vote the same way. So I guess if none of us talk about it and none of us said anything about it, none of us signed a blood oath or blood pact, I guess what does that mean?
Would you like me to respond, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Scott, and then I'll jump in as well.
Why don't you jump in?
So, Senator Kawasaki, I think that getting down to the nuances of the weeds and the discussion is there are several experiences that all of us, I think, have taken, and a couple of the folks that are new this year that have not seen it other than just listen to how it played out. So, you know, to give a for example, when we had organization meetings in late 2018, it was a different setup than what you went through in the House with that bipartisan coalition you just mentioned. There was 13 of us, I believe, about 12 or 13 that were having a discussion. And it was very clear on the binding rule, they called it, that if you were going to join this caucus, then you were going to vote for the budget and you were going to follow the procedural rulings of the chair no matter what they were. I mean, those were crystal clear statements. And that if you did not do so, you were going to lose all those things. They would be stripped from you. At the time, it was only committee chair. As it turned out in January of last year, it ended up being everything for some of us. They just threw it all. And so for example, as we discussed this, when there were six of us sitting, a couple of us are in this committee, on July 29th of last year, we were told that it was a binding vote, which we did not believe it was. To describe the coercive factor, I watched several of my colleagues literally sit there almost frozen in, not fear is not the right word, but frozen into inaction. Because they're like, if I vote for this, I'm going against what my constituents want me to do. If I don't vote for this, now I'm stuck and I don't get resources. They're going to strip everything from me. I'm ineffective. It was the threat of coercion, that hammer over their head. And we saw it crystal clear in how the last leadership team used it as a weapon to get what they wanted. And it was through coercion. I don't know how else to describe it, which is a part of how we came into being with the bill. And I know that at other times I have spoken to previous legislators, one of them a former lieutenant governor, when they were in where they didn't have it. Just like you said, they got together and they never talked about their vote. They pretty much did what they wanted. Everybody was happy with it. It all worked out. Maybe they had enough money back then. I don't know. Different times today with the PFD and the budget squeeze. But what my experience has been, even from the very first time when I was appointed over 3 years ago, and I came in and 5 minutes after I got here, sat down in the Senate president's office, and it was, you're going to join the caucus, and then we got into the binding vote. And I was told, well, I said, what does that mean? Well, you're going to agree to vote for the budget. I'm like, what's the budget going to be? We don't know yet. When are you going to know? A couple months. I have to agree to vote for the budget and I haven't seen it yet? Yeah. Okay. So my introduction was quite different. And it has, so far until this year, it has always been, you will do this or else. And when you look up the statutes, it's very clear that if you have a elected official that is basically told to vote, to do something, to vote, you know, or not vote, is coercion. And I don't know how else better to describe it. We've looked at this in multiple things. We also believe that enticement is a part of it, because you get something for promising something before you've ever taken the action. So I don't know, Senator Kawasaki, that may be too much, and I'm maybe spiraling in a different direction than what you asked, to go back to your question to get it on point again off the philosophy side. So you may want to follow it up with a comment or a question.
No, I appreciate that. I guess I do want to know, though, that if what it means to commit or what it means to bind another person. I guess my other question is, even if a legislator might not, there are powerful people in the building who are spokespersons for their bosses. What happens in that case? Are they bound by the same ethics rules?
We are addressing legislators only, not staff, if that's the question, just to make sure I get it right.
Yeah, that was my main question.
Yes, this is addressed to legislators and their how they have to, you know, essentially treat each other. They can't demand certain actions and use the threat of a binding rule to take an action that a legislator opposes and does not want to do in opposition to their own ethics, their own, you know, conscience, their constituents, whatever it may be. But I do not believe, and I will ask Mr. Ogun to clarify, that this has any bearing on staff whatsoever. But Mr. Ogun, can you make sure I'm not getting that wrong, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the legislation expressly mentioned legislators, not necessarily staff. And if you're interested, Mr. Chairman, I could share some historical perspective from being a former member myself, if you wish.
Context is important. Scott, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I served 10 years in the legislature in both the House and the Senate. And when I first joined, we had an understanding that we had to all work together as a team and pull together. And eventually we're going to have to get out of town. And to get out of town, you have to do your constitutional duty, and that would be vote for a budget. So we had a kind of, I would call it, a semi-binding caucus. But it was a little bit differently applied than what I've seen in recent years. What I personally experienced myself is when I was staff for you in the last session, Mr. Chairman. So the idea was that we would, you know, we're going to have to get this budget out of town, and we're all not going to get, nobody gets everything they want. And we're just going to have to, but there was a consensus that was built within the caucus. It wasn't a small group of people that was telling people, you've got to vote this no matter what, or you're going to get kicked out. It was, we'd go behind closed doors. We'd argue our priorities. We'd make our case. Sometimes there was accommodations. Sometimes there wasn't. But the general philosophy was that we're all members of the majority. And as a majority members, we had the opportunity to advocate in caucus and individually with the co-chair of the different finance subcommittees and the co-chairs of the committees, the full committees. And so he had a lot of opportunity to influence the budget. But when we get out on the floor, we need to hang together, and we can't vote for minority amendments. Minority would usually leverage us for their amendments by, well, it was before actually cameras were allowed on the floor. And they would, when I was in the House, and they would literally keep us up all night and moving amendment after amendment after amendment, and then maybe there would be a break, and we'd, but it was, you know, I was in a Republican majority, so we were trying to reduce the budget, and the minority generally was trying to stop those reductions or increase the budget. And so there was this tug of war that was going on. It was basically a will of, you know, a will that of, you know, who could stay out there and stay awake the longest on the floor battles. And sometimes we went to 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning on those budget battles, but we had to hang together as a majority. And but there wasn't this coercive threat so much. It was more of a you know, leadership, listen to our concerns. We all kind of got together as a team. And I don't think it was nearly as toxic as what I'd seen in the last couple of years. And I'll let you go into that. I don't want to disparage anybody, but it certainly wasn't what I knew as a fighting caucus when I served. And so that's a little historic perspective from my view.
Thank you, Mr. Ogan. Mr. Shanahan, you had a question or a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Terrence Shanahan, committee aide and staff for Senator Schauer. I just wanted to also provide just some perspective in terms of a law enforcement component of this, because in my previous career as a law enforcement officer, when we looked at this, we did examine three particular criminal statutes, which were bribery, coercion, and this concept of where something like quid pro quo might play a factor in this. And I think where it's important to underline here is that if members go into the Open Meetings Act, look at our ethics statutes, look at bribery, look at coercion as those statutes, there are multiple places where it talks about public officials and influencing their official actions and duties and how that's improper. And there are plenty of places in there where a person can try to find an out and can find a technical way of getting around them. But we always were able to find through our discussions ways that these continue to apply. Even though somebody would find a way to get out of it, we could find a way to reapply it. And I think the word of enticement, we address that, and that's a very, I guess, friendly word. It's a soft word, because it's easy for us to suggest something that might be a bribe if it's obviously criminal, when it's like an outside force influencing somebody. But when it was internal, they don't always come across as, they're not bribes, they're just enticements. They're whether or not you have an increased number of staff, you're getting a bigger office, you're getting a more prominent position. But when the exchange of coercion happens, that enticement becomes a bribe, and that sort of is a complementary act. And so if you just entice somebody and said, hey, come be a part of the caucus, that in itself, there's some benefits there. But once you're in that, if you have an agreement, or there's an expectation, or maybe you've already received the enticement, and enticements aren't inherently negative, they're positive too. But once you've received it, once you're told you will vote for the budget, or you are going to lose your staff, or your staff is going to lose points, or you start to apply those punishments, that's the coercion. And that what was once just an enticement, when you look back on it, you can say, maybe the receiver didn't take it as a bribe, but the one that's applying the coercion, you can start to make the argument that that does become a bribe. And so I guess in our deliberations, I just want to also underline that we discussed how it was different and similar with outside activities, when it's an outside influence bringing outside things like monetary value of things to an inside influence, where monetary value doesn't necessarily change hands. But when you look at the statutes, it's clear it's about influencing the vote, not about the monetary value of what's exchanged. And when the expectation is you will vote a certain way, or we're going to apply this negative factor of the punishment, then that's the coercive nature that starts to apply criminal statute.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shanigan. And I would add just two things and open up for any other questions or comments here is that the irony of what Mr. Ogan had mentioned about how in the past maybe if there was a certain majority and then a minority would request more things added to the budget from a perspective, and that's been one of the arguments I've heard consistently as we go back over those same arguments, well, it's going to cost us money. The irony over the last 2 years is the ones that were coerced were the ones that were trying to force the budget down, not up. So the argument kind of falls flat on how it was used and why it was used. And the other thing is really ultimately what this bill is about is having experienced perhaps the worst that can happen from individuals that might find themselves in a position of authority, power, leadership, et cetera, in a body where they could actually not listen to and know the outcome already. And no matter what happens, they already know the outcome is certain as we start the session for what the budget's going to be, and they don't have to worry about it. Do they really have to listen to inputs from every one of their members? And I would argue they don't, because they already have an outcome that is set and they know they have tools to enforce it. And so our contention is that legislators should be free to vote how they want to always. It doesn't matter if you're majority or minority. You don't work for leadership. You don't work for a caucus. You don't even really work for a party. You work for the people you represent. And if your people want you to support and vote for certain things or don't want you to support and not vote for certain things, you should be free to do that always as a legislator. And I will tell you, my experience in this body for 3 years has been that is not the case in how we do business in Alaska. We can do it better. We can do it cleaner. We can do it more ethically. And that is the reason we filed this bill, to prevent moving forward, if this ever happens again, that we have a statutory authority to back us up and say, no, I'm sorry, Mr. XYZ or Mrs. XYZ in charge, you can't do that. Your legislators are always free in this state to vote as they see best. And we just think that's the best path to move forward that gives us something with teeth in it to inform future leaders in this body that they can never, you know, basically have a set outcome. And they always, and this is always part of it, decentralizing power so that they always have to listen to every legislator's voice, to every legislator's input, and they have to work with everybody, because they can't shut people down just to get their way with this tool of a binding caucus handed to them. So that's kind of the pitch on that one, but I'll open up again to Senator Kawasaki. I hope that maybe answered the perspective we're coming from. I'm certainly open to more debate and comments or questions. What does anybody else have? Anything?
Chairman?
Senator Rambo, go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is such a near and dear to my heart, Bill. I can't tell you how many times I've been punished because of the binding caucus. Before I got punished in 2015, the last time someone was punished was 10 years before. So I had no idea what was going on. No one told me. So I'll just tell you just at a high level what happened to me. I was in a caucus of roughly 30 people, and so we had a supermajority. So they really didn't need my vote in the big picture, but that's kind of irrelevant right now. But we all went around the room as a freshman, and they said, we're just agreeing, you know, that we're going to have five principles, and we had a weekend, and we decided what those five principles were going to be. And let me tell you, it was very difficult. It was a long, hard weekend. But I do remember two of the five principles that were up on the site. One of them was save for future generations, and another one was live within our means. And we were a Republican caucus, and we were supposed to be standing on the Republican platform. I was on, I believe, six committees and three subcommittees, which is almost the same as what I'm on right now. You guys know I like to be on a lot of committees. And I had worked really hard to cut the budget. And I remember working in particular with Rep. Tammy Wilson, Representative Kurt Olson, and Representative Millett. And we made some good cuts, like a $10 million cut to the university budget. And it was about $1 billion of supplemental from all sources. So think about it. It's a pretty tiny percentage, you know, $10 million. But it was good enough for us. And bottom line is we made some cuts to education and pre-K. We were getting smeared in the newspapers. You know what the newspapers like to do if, you know, if you take away the potato chips, they have a fit. But anyway, we had also agreed in that caucus meeting that if you were bold enough to cut the budget, we were going to honor your cut, because we know it was hard to do. And we all stuck together, and we were going to bring all those cuts to the end. Sadly, co-chairman Mark Newman at the time Republican from a very conservative area, decided to just throw us under the bus. And he ended up having 81 amendments. I won't forget the day that I was sitting in finance. And I believe it was either amendment number 10 or amendment number 11. And it was the $10 million university budget that, of course, we had been ostracized in the newspaper for and just around the community. And we were still going to hold to it. When they put that amendment and it passed, I realized, I walked out of the finance and I realized I had a big decision to make, that Mark Duman was not honoring his commitment to the caucus. So I went back to my staff. At the time, I had four staff, and they were amazing. This was our third session together. And I said, you guys, we're all equal right now. We have each a 25% vote. And anyway, we all voted that we were going to honor the commitment that I made to the people and the caucus agreement. And all four of us put a vote, and it was a unanimous decision in my office. There was one staff I had back home as well, but she wasn't part of the discussion. But the bottom line was, is we said, no, we're going to vote no. We made an agreement, and we were upholding the principles of the caucus. Anyway, I ended up voting no. And a couple days later, it was shocking what happened to me. Absolutely shocking. Three or four of my staff were fired in the same day. I lost all my committee assignments except one. I was put on regional and community affairs, so that was the only one I was allowed to be on. And my whole world got rocked. Within a month or so, the only staff I had left, they reduced her pay 6 points, I believe. It was either 5 or 6 points. And she ended up walking. She couldn't afford it at the time. I will tell you, my whole world changed. Then I got back to my district, and my office was taken from me the day I was celebrating my birthday. And it was just one thing after another for a year and a half. Then I was taken off my commissionership, and it didn't stop. And I still kept showing up at all my committee meetings and trying really hard to work with leadership, but they weren't interested. And it was really a complete ostracization of me for about a year and a half. I never imagined a workplace could be like that. So anyway, I will tell you, I am supporting this bill and may likely become a co-chair of this bill. And I cannot wait to get it to judiciary, because I wish I would have thought about this, to be honest with you. And I really want to say thank you from the depths of my heart for bringing this forth. It's a much-needed bill.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Other comments, questions from committee members? And just Senator Kawasaki, I hope I answered your question before. If there's anything else, please go ahead.
And Mr. Chair, this is Senator Holland when you get a chance.
Senator Holland, go ahead, and then we'll get Senator Kawasaki. You beat him. I could just tell in teams. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of get where Senator Kawasaki is coming from, because, you know, it's going to get down to what's the definition of is, or that kind of a thing. I'm wondering if we don't want to reconsider this and call it. First of all, I'm totally in favor of it. I mean, I think the binding caucus, I think when you're in the business, you kind of know what it is. But it may be something to phrase page 1, line 8, instead of a legislator may not commit, maybe phrase it some one of two ways. Either say a legislator may not request or require commitment and phrase along those lines, or even, I know this is seems like contrary to what we're trying to accomplish here, but turn it around to where someone, instead of requiring someone to promise, a legislator cannot promise their vote in a future situation. And I know we're saying, oh, well, we're putting the onus on in a binding caucus, we're putting the onus on the bindees and not the binders when you do that. But just makes it, you know, against legislation to even promise your vote in that situation. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Senator Holland. That's a great way of looking at it, because you can say that from the Ethics Act too, right? We may consider that, and maybe I'll talk to the various committee members about that, because like ethics, you can have the person that's perpetrating the bribe, you can have the person that accepts the bribe. It can go both ways, right? So this could be a different way to write it that might even make more sense. And I know, Senator Kawasaki, you were going to comment there before you got cut off.
I was just going to say that our Democratic caucus is non-binding. You know, we vote because we're aligned on a lot of our issues together. And I mentioned that I've never been part of a binding caucus. And so I invite anybody that's out there who wants to join our caucus, that you guys are welcome to join us.
Touche. Well done, sir. Well done. Yes. That's a good comment. If I was in the minority, I'd be saying the same thing. So I am going to ask with that, and it is much easier being in a minority where you're not in a bind, I will tell you that. So, because I did not join the Binding Caucus my first year. Before you go, Senator Holland, I'm just real quick, if I can have, Mr. Ogun, can you go ahead and read that statute into the record, just so we have it there for the record?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to read the coercion statute into the records. It's AS 11-41-530. A, a person commits the crime of coercion if the person compels another to engage in conduct from which there is a legal right to abstain or abstain from conduct when there's a legal right to engage by means of instilling in the person who's compelled a fear that if demand is not compelled with, the person who makes the demand or another may, and then paragraph four or sentence, or section four of that statute says, take or withhold action as a public servant or cause a public servant to take or withhold action. That is, you know, if you read that definition, and I invite you all to look at that, that's 1141-530 when you get a chance. And to me, and, you know, maybe Mr. Shanigan can, as a former state trooper, can elaborate on, you know, does this behavior resemble coercion? Now, we didn't go there with trying to criminalize this with big penalties. We're trying to make it an ethics issue in that we can, so we can regulate this internally. But it's certainly it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck. It's a duck, right? And this duck walks and quacks like coercion.
Thank you, Mr. Ogun. And Senator Holland, go ahead. I know you were starting to talk there.
Oh, yeah, just a minor thing, I don't want to cast aspersions on the other body, but I thought that I heard that the majority that formed in the other body formed as a binding caucus, and would I be correct in that?
I believe that is a true statement this time around.
Thank you.
And Mr. Shanigan, did you have anything you wanted to add from Mr. Ogun's comment? Okay, great. Any other comments or questions from committee members? Senator Costello, welcome back from space. You seem to be home on planet Earth now.
I've been here the whole time. Thank you.
It's funny. The stars in the background is kind of an interesting thing, how this Mr. Ogun's in the desert, you're out in space. It's kind of amusing to watch. It's a different world we live in. I'll wrap up some comments here real quick. At the end of the day, folks, my experience here has been pretty negative with how the Binding Caucus works, and that certainly can be personality-driven. I understand you can have one in the past, perhaps when there was more money where it worked out okay, you could just hand it out, and perhaps that alleviated some of the tension. Those days are past, and it certainly has worked in the past, I would argue, but what I have seen and experienced show me that, you know, hope is not a plan, and, you know, we go, well, you know, if we have new people, it'll be just fine. But that's hope, and I don't like hope. I would rather see something that is structural that says you can't do that again so that people that are future legislators do not go what myself and others have gone through. Because if I go back to a little over a year ago, I had two committees, and I'm not going to go through the whole list. I had two committees or two chairmanships, five committees, and three subcommittees, I think, and I lost all of them. Everything was taken. How can that not fall under the umbrella of coercion is beyond me, that I was told I would vote a certain way or all of that would be taken. And my district lost half of my staff and the ability for me to be effective representation. I don't see another way to look at this, and I think we can do better. I think we should. Everybody, minority, majority, Democrat, Republican, you should always be allowed to vote the way that you think is best, and I just think we can do better. So that's kind of my wrap-up statement for that. Seeing no further questions at this time from the committee, I'd like to thank my staff for go ahead. I'm sorry, I might have missed one.
Senator Showers.
Senator Rambo, go ahead. Last comment.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I just Googled my name, and it was March 16th, I believe, 2015. So almost 6 years to the date. And I want to say one other thing on record, that I was never told what was going to happen to me. It just all of a sudden, boom, happened. So it was a shocking, because it hadn't been 10 years since anyone had done anything similar. But anyway, just wanted to say this is remarkable that this is almost 6 years to the date. So thank you for this really great idea. I really appreciate you bringing this forth.
Thank you, Senator Rambel. Three of the five members of this committee have been punished under a binding caucus in the past, and it's important for us to discuss it for folks on the record. So I'd like to thank my staff for assisting us today with this, and especially doing this a little different with Teams and trying to make the building a little safer as we work through this until we can go back to normal operations. Hopefully this was good for you guys, worked out okay. We're going to go with amendments for SB 31 open until Friday, March 26 at 5 p.m. You can submit them to my committee aide, Terrence Shanigan. We're going to set this bill aside to take up at a future meeting. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 9th at, I'm sorry, that is incorrect. It is not March 9th. It is March 23rd. March 23rd at 3:30 p.m. We'll be hearing under bills previously heard SB 71, Council on the Arts, Plates and Management, Manager Art, and SB 84, Land Vouchers, PFD, Governor Appointees, and SB 77, Use of Internet for Charitable Gaming. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee comes from us, SB 47, Vehicle Registration, Persons with Disability. So we got a full list for next week. We'll be busy. Seeing no further business before the committee, we're going to adjourn at 4:21 p.m. Thanks for staying on board, folks.